You haven't been in the meetings, big deal. You've still been here, haven't you? You've still been together. Me? I've been stuck at the Dursleys for a month, and I've handled more than you two have ever managed, and Dumbledore knows it. Who saved the Sorcerer's Stone? Who got rid of Riddle? Who saved both your skins from the Dementors? Every bitter and resentful thought that Harry had had in the past month was pouring out of him. His frustration at the lack of news, the hurt that they had all been together without him, his fury at being followed and not told about it. All the feelings he was half ashamed of finally burst their boundaries. Hedwig took fright at the noise and soared off on top of the wardrobe again. Pigwidgeon twittered in alarm and zoomed even faster around their heads. Who had to get past dragons and sphinxes and every other foul thing last year? Who saw him come back? Who had to escape from him? Me! Ron was standing there with his mouth half open, clearly stunned and at a loss for anything to say, while Hermione looked on the verge of tears. But why should I know what's going on? Why should anyone bother to tell me what's been happening?
Harry, we wanted to tell you, we really did, Hermione began.
Can't have wanted to that much, can you? Or you'd have sent me an owl. But Dumbledore made you swear.
Well, he did.
4 weeks I've been stuck in Privet Drive, nicking papers out of bins to try and find out what's been going on.
We wanted to...
I suppose you've been having a real laugh, haven't you, all holed up here together?
No, honest. Harry, we're really sorry, said Hermione desperately, her eyes now sparkling with tears. You're absolutely right, Harry. I'd be furious if it was me.
Harry glared at her, still breathing deeply, then turned away from them again, pacing up and down. Hedwig hooted glumly from the top of the wardrobe. There was a long pause, broken only by the mournful creak of the floorboards below Harry's feet. What is this place, anyway? He shot at Ron and Hermione.
Headquarters of the Order of the Phoenix, said Ron at once.
Is anyone going to bother telling me what the Order of the Phoenix...
It's a secret society, said Hermione quickly. Dumbledore's in charge. He founded it. It's the people who fought against you-know-who last time.
Who's in it? Said Harry, coming to a halt with his hands in his pockets.
Quite a few people.
We've met about 20 of them, said Ron,
but we think there are more.
Harry glared at them. Well? He demanded, looking from one to the other. Said Ron.
Well, what?
Voldemort, said Harry furiously, and both Ron and Hermione winced. What's happening? What's he up to? Where is he? What are we doing to stop him?
We've told you. The Order don't let us in on their meetings, said Hermione nervously. So we don't know the details, but we've got a general idea,
she added hastily, seeing the look on Harry's face.
Fred and George have invented extendable ears, see? Said Ron. They're really useful.
Extendable ears? Yeah, only we've had to stop using them lately because Mum found out and went berserk. Fred and George had to hide them all to stop Mum binning them. But we got a good bit of use out of them before Mum realized what was going on.
We know some of the Order are following known Death Eaters, keeping tabs on them, you know. Some of them are working on recruiting more people to the Order, said Hermione.
And some of them are standing guard over something, said Ron.
They're always talking about guard duty.
Couldn't have been me, could it? Said Harry sarcastically.
Oh, yeah, said Ron,
with a look of dawning comprehension. Harry snorted. He walked around the room again, looking anywhere but at Ron and Hermione. So what have you two been doing if you're not allowed in meetings? He demanded. You said you'd been busy.
We have, said Hermione quickly. We've been decontaminating this house. It's been empty for ages, and stuff's been breeding in here. We've managed to clean out the kitchen, most of the bedrooms, and I think we're doing the drawing room
With two loud cracks, Fred and George, Ron's elder twin brothers, had materialized out of thin air in the middle of the room. Pigwidgeon twittered more wildly than ever and zoomed off to join Hedwig on top of the wardrobe.
Stop doing that,
Hermione said weakly to the twins, who were as vividly red-haired as Ron, though stockier and slightly shorter.
"Hello, Harry," said George, beaming at him. "We thought we heard your dulcet tones. You don't want to bottle up your anger like that, Harry. Let it all out," said Fred, also beaming. "There might be a couple of people 50 miles away who didn't hear you."
"You two passed your apparition test, then?" asked Harry grumpily.
"With distinction," said Fred, who was holding what looked like a piece of very long flesh-coloured string.
It would have taken you about 30 seconds longer to walk down the stairs, said Ron.
Time is galleons, little brother, said Fred. Anyway, Harry, you're interfering with reception.
Extendable ears, he added in response to Harry's raised eyebrows, holding up the string, which Harry now saw was trailing out onto the landing. We're trying to hear what's going on downstairs.
You want to be careful, said Ron, staring at the ear.
If Mum sees one of them again,
it's worth the risk. That's a major meeting they're having, said Fred.
The door opened and a long mane of red hair appeared.
Oh, hello, Harry,
said Ron's younger sister, Ginny, brightly.
I thought I heard your voice.
Turning to Fred and George, she said,
It's no go with the extendable ears. She's gone and put an imperturbable charm on the kitchen door.
How do you know? Said George, looking crestfallen.
Tonks told me how to find out, said Ginny. You just chuck stuff at the door, and if it can't make contact, the door's been imperturbed. I've been flicking dung bombs at it from the top of the stairs, and they just soar away from it, so there's no way the extendable ears will be able to get under the gap.
Fred heaved a deep sigh. Shame. I really fancied finding out what old Snape's been up to.
Snape? Said Harry quickly. Is he here?
Yeah, said George, carefully closing the door and sitting down on one of the beds. Fred and Ginny followed.
Giving a report, top secret.
Git, said Fred idly.
He's on our side now, said Hermione reprovingly.
Ron snorted. Doesn't stop him being a git. The way he looks at us when he sees us.
Bill doesn't like him either,
said Ginny, as though that settled the matter. Harry was not sure his anger had abated yet, but his thirst for information was now overcoming his urge to keep shouting. He sank onto the bed opposite the others.
Is Bill here? He asked. I thought he was working in Egypt.
He applied for a desk job so he could come home and work for the Order, said Fred. He says he misses the tombs, but,
he smirked, there are compensations.
What do you mean?
Remember old Fleur Delacour, said George. She's got a job at Gringotts to improve her English.
And Bill's been giving her a lot of private lessons, sniggered Fred.
Charlie's in the Order too, said George, but he's still in Romania.
Dumbledore wants as many foreign wizards brought in as possible, so Charlie's trying to make contacts on his days off.
Couldn't Percy do that? Harry asked.
The last he had heard, the third Weasley brother was working in the Department of International Magical Cooperation at the Ministry of Magic. At these words, all the Weasleys and Hermione exchanged darkly significant looks.
Whatever you do, don't mention Percy in front of Mum and Dad, Ron told Harry in a tense voice.
Why not?
Because every time Percy's name's mentioned, Dad breaks whatever he's holding and Mum starts crying, Fred said.
It's been awful, said Ginny sadly.
I think we're well shut of him, said George, with an uncharacteristically ugly look on his face.
What's happened? Harry said.
Percy and Dad had a row, said Fred. I've never seen Dad row with anyone like that. It's normally Mum who shouts.
It was the first week back after term ended, said Ron. We were about to come and join the Order. Percy came home and told us he'd been promoted.
You're kidding? Said Harry.
Though he knew perfectly well that Percy was highly ambitious, Harry's impression was that Percy had not made a great success of his first job at the Ministry of Magic. Percy had committed the fairly large oversight of failing to notice that his boss was being controlled by Lord Voldemort. Not that the Ministry had believed that. They all thought that Mr. Crouch had gone mad.
Yeah, we were all surprised, said George. Because Percy got into a load of trouble about Crouch, there was an inquiry and everything. They said Percy ought to have realized Crouch was off his rocker and informed a superior. But you know Percy. Crouch left him in charge. He wasn't going to complain.
So how come they promoted him?
That's exactly what we wondered, said Ron, who seemed very keen to keep normal conversation going now that Harry had stopped yelling. He came home really pleased with himself, even more pleased than usual, if you can imagine that. And told Dad he'd been offered a position in Fudge's own office. A really good one for someone only a year out of Hogwarts. Junior assistant to the minister. He expected Dad to be all impressed, I think.
Only Dad wasn't, said Fred grimly.
Why not, said Harry.
Well, apparently Fudge has been storming round the ministry checking that nobody's having any contact with Dumbledore, said George.
Dumbledore's name's mud with the ministry these days, see? Said Fred. They all think he's just making trouble saying, you know who's back.
Dad says Fudge has made it clear that anyone who's in league with Dumbledore can clear out their desks, said George.
Trouble is, Fudge suspects Dad. He knows he's friendly with Dumbledore, and he's always thought Dad's a bit of a weirdo because of his muggle obsession.
But what's this got to do with Percy? Asked Harry, confused.
I'm coming to that.
Dad reckons Fudge only wants Percy in his office because he wants to use him to spy on the family and Dumbledore.
Harry let out a low whistle.
Bet Percy loved that.
Ron laughed in a hollow sort of way.
He went completely berserk. He said loads of terrible stuff. He said he's been having to struggle against Dad's lousy reputation ever since he joined the ministry, and that Dad's got no ambition, and that's why we've always been, you know, not had a lot of money. I mean,
what?
Said Harry in disbelief, as Ginny made a noise like an angry cat.
I know, said Ron in a low voice, and it got worse. He said Dad was an idiot to run around with Dumbledore, that Dumbledore was heading for big trouble, and Dad was going to go down with him, and that he, Percy, knew where his loyalty lay, and it was with the ministry. And if Mum and Dad were going to become traitors to the ministry, he was going to make sure everyone knew he didn't belong to our family anymore. And he packed his bags the same night and left. He's living here in London now.
Harry swore under his breath. He'd always liked Percy, least of Ron's brothers, but he had never imagined he would say such things to Mr. Weasley.
Mum's been in a right state, said Ron dully. You know, crying and stuff. She came up to London to try and talk to Percy, but he slammed the door in her face. I don't know what he does if he meets Dad at work. Ignores him, I suppose.
But Percy must know Voldemort's back, said Harry slowly. He's not stupid. He must know your mum and dad wouldn't risk everything without proof.
Yeah, well, your name got dragged into the row, said Ron, shooting Harry a furtive look. Percy said the only evidence was your word and, I don't know, he didn't think it was good enough.
Percy takes the Daily Prophet seriously, said Hermione tartly, and the others all nodded.
What are you talking about? Harry asked, looking around at them all. They were all regarding him warily.
Haven't you been getting the Daily Prophet?
Hermione asked nervously.
Yeah, I have, said Harry.
Have you, been reading it thoroughly?
Hermione asked still more anxiously.
Not cover to cover, said Harry defensively. If they were going to report anything about Voldemort, it would be headline news, wouldn't it?
The others flinched at the sound of the name.
Hermione hurried on.
Well, you'd need to read it cover to cover to pick it up. But they mention you a couple of times a week.
But I'd have seen...
Not if you'd only been reading the front page, you wouldn't, said Hermione, shaking her head. I'm not talking about big articles. They just slip you in, like you're a standing joke.
What do you...
It's quite nasty, actually,
said Hermione in a voice of forced calm.
They're just building on Rita's stuff.
But she's not writing for them anymore, is she?
Oh, no, she's kept her promise. Not that she's got any choice,
Hermione added with satisfaction.
But she laid the foundation for what they're trying to do now.
Which is what? Said Harry impatiently.
Okay, you know she wrote that you were collapsing all over the place and saying your scar was hurting and all that.
Yeah,
said Harry, who was not likely to forget Rita Skeeter's stories about him in a hurry.
Well... They're writing about you as though you're this deluded attention-seeking person who thinks he's a great tragic hero or something,
said Hermione very fast, as though it would be less unpleasant for Harry to hear these facts quickly.
They keep slipping in snide comments about you. If some far-fetched story appears, they say something like, a tale worthy of Harry Potter. And if anyone has a funny accident or anything, it's, let's hope he hasn't got a scar on his forehead, or we'll be asked to worship him next.
I don't want anyone to worship, Harry began hotly.
I know you don't, said Hermione quickly, looking frightened. I know, Harry, but you see what they're doing. They want to turn you into someone nobody will believe. Fudge is behind it, I'll bet anything. They want wizards on the street to think you're just some stupid boy who's a bit of a joke, who tells ridiculous tall stories because he loves being famous and wants to keep it going.
I didn't ask. I didn't want... Voldemort killed my parents, Harry spluttered. I got famous because he murdered my family but couldn't kill me. Who wants to be famous for that? Don't they think I'd rather it had never...
We know, Harry, said Ginny earnestly.
And of course, they didn't report a word about the Dementors attacking you, said Hermione. Someone's told them to keep that quiet. That should have been a really big story. Out of control Dementors. They haven't even reported that you broke the International Statute of Secrecy. We thought they would. It would tie in so well with this image of you as some stupid show-off. We think they're biding their time until you're expelled. Then they're really going to go to town. I mean, if you're expelled, obviously, she went on hastily. You really shouldn't be, not if they abide by their own laws. There's no case against you.
They were back on the hearing, and Harry did not want to think about it. He cast around for another change of subject, but was saved the necessity of finding one by the sound of footsteps coming up the stairs. Uh-oh. Fred gave the extendable ear a hearty tug. There was another loud crack, and he and George vanished. Seconds later, Mrs. Weasley appeared in the bedroom doorway.
The meeting's over. You can come down and have dinner now. Everyone's dying to see you, Harry. And who's left all those dung bombs outside the kitchen door?
Crookshanks, said Ginny unblushingly. He loves playing with them.
Oh, said Mrs. Weasley. I thought it might have been Creature. He keeps doing odd things like that. Now, don't forget to keep your voices down in the hall. Ginny, your hands are filthy. What have you been doing? Go and wash them before dinner, please.
Ginny grimaced at the others and followed her mother out of the room, leaving Harry alone with Ron and Hermione again. Both of them were watching him apprehensively as though they feared that he would start shouting again now that everyone else had gone. The sight of them looking so nervous made him feel slightly ashamed.
Look, he muttered, but Ron shook his head, and Hermione said quietly, We knew you'd be angry, Harry. We really don't blame you, but you've got to understand, we did try and persuade Dumbledore.
Yeah, I know, said Harry grudgingly. He cast around for a topic to change the subject from Dumbledore. The very thought of him made Harry's insides burn with anger again.
"Who's Creature?" he asked. "The house elf who lives here," said Ron. "Nutter. Never met one like him."
Hermione frowned at Ron.
"He's not a nutter, Ron.
His life's ambition is to have his head cut off and stuck up on a plaque just like his mother," said Ron irritably.
"Is that normal, Hermione?"
Well, if he is a bit strange, it's not his fault.
Ron rolled his eyes at Harry.
Hermione still hasn't given up on spew.
It's not spew, said Hermione heatedly. It's the Society for the Promotion of Elfish Welfare, and it's not just me. Dumbledore says we should be kind to Creature too.
Yeah, said Ron. Come on, I'm starving.
He led the way out of the door and onto the landing. But before they could descend the stairs...
Hold it!
Ron breathed, flinging out an arm to stop Harry and Hermione walking any farther.
They're still in the hall. We might be able to hear something.
The three of them looked cautiously over the banisters. The gloomy hallway below was packed with witches and wizards, including all of Harry's guard. They were whispering excitedly together. In the very center of the group, Harry saw the dark, greasy-haired head and prominent nose of his least favorite teacher at Hogwarts, Professor Snape. Harry leaned farther over the banisters. He was very interested in what Snape was doing for the Order of the Phoenix. A thin piece of flesh-colored string descended in front of Harry's eyes. Looking up, he saw Fred and George on the landing above, cautiously lowering the extendable ear toward the dark knot of people below. A moment later, however, they began to move toward the front door and out of sight.
"Damn it!"
Harry heard Fred whisper as he hoisted the extendable ear back up again. They heard the front door open and then close.
"Snape never eats here,"
Ron told Harry quietly.
"Thank God. Come on." "And don't forget to keep your voice down in the hall, Harry,"
Hermione whispered. As they passed the row of house elf heads on the wall, they saw Lupin, Mrs. Weasley and Tonks at the front door, magically sealing its many locks and bolts behind those who had just left.
"We're eating down in the kitchen,"
Mrs. Weasley whispered, meeting them at the bottom of the stairs.
"Harry, dear, if you'll just tiptoe across the hall, it's through this door here." Crash! "Tonks!"
cried Mrs. Weasley exasperatedly, turning to look behind her.
"I'm sorry!" wailed Tonks, who was lying flat on the floor.
It's that stupid umbrella stand. That's the second time I've tripped over.
But the rest of her words were drowned by a horrible, ear-splitting, blood-curdling screech. The moth-eaten velvet curtains Harry had passed earlier had flown apart, but there was no door behind them. For a split second, Harry thought he was looking through a window behind which an old woman in a black cap was screaming and screaming as though she was being tortured. Then he realized it was simply a life-size portrait, but the most realistic and the most unpleasant he had ever seen in his life. The old woman was drooling, her eyes were rolling, the yellowing skin of her face stretched taut as she screamed, and all along the hall behind them the other portraits awoke and began to yell too, so that Harry actually screwed up his eyes at the noise and clapped his hands over his ears. Lupin and Mrs. Weasley darted forward and tried to tug the curtains shut over the old woman, but they would not close, and she screeched louder than ever, brandishing clawed hands as though trying to tear at their faces.
"Filth, scum, by-products of dirt and vileness, half-breeds, mutants, freaks, begone from this place! How dare you befoul the house of my fathers!"
Tonks apologized over and over again, at the same time dragging the huge, heavy troll's leg back off the floor. Mrs. Weasley abandoned the attempt to close the curtains and hurried up and down the hall, stunning all the other portraits with her wand. Then a man with long black hair came charging out of a door facing Harry.
"Shut up, you horrible old hag, shut up!"
he roared, seizing the curtain Mrs. Weasley had abandoned. The old woman's face blanched.
"You!"
she howled, her eyes popping at the sight of the man.
"Blood chaser, abomination, shame of my flesh!"
"I said shut up!"
roared the man, and with a stupendous effort he and Lupin managed to force the curtains closed again. The old woman's screeches died, and an echoing silence fell. Panting slightly and sweeping his long dark hair out of his eyes, Harry's godfather, Sirius, turned to face him.
"Hello, Harry," he said grimly. "I see you've met my mother."
Chapter 5 The Order of the Phoenix.
"You're my dear old mum, yeah," said Sirius. "We've been trying to get her down for a month, but we think she put a permanent sticking charm on the back of the canvas. Let's get downstairs quick before they all wake up again."
"But what's a portrait of your mother doing here?" Harry asked, bewildered, as they went through the door from the hall and led the way down a flight of narrow stone steps, the others just behind them.
"Hasn't anyone told you? This was my parents' house," said Sirius, "but I'm the last black left, so it's mine now. I offered it to Dumbledore for headquarters, about the only useful thing I've been able to do."
Harry, who had expected a better welcome, noted how hard and bitter Sirius's voice sounded. He followed his godfather to the bottom of the stairs and through a door leading into the basement kitchen. It was scarcely less gloomy than the hall above, a cavernous room with rough stone walls. Most of the light was coming from a large fire at the far end of the room. A haze of pipe smoke hung in the air like battle fumes, through which loomed the menacing shapes of heavy iron pots and pans hanging from the dark ceiling. Many chairs had been crammed into the room for the meeting, and a long wooden table stood in the middle of the room, littered with rolls of parchment, goblets, empty wine bottles, and a heap of what appeared to be rags. Mr. Weasley and his eldest son, Bill, were talking quietly with their heads together at the end of the table. Mrs. Weasley cleared her throat. Her husband, a thin, balding, red-haired man who wore horn-rimmed glasses, looked around and jumped to his feet.
"Harry!"
Mr. Weasley said, hurrying forward to greet him and shaking his hand vigorously.
"Good to see you."
Over his shoulder, Harry saw Bill, who still wore his long hair in a ponytail, hastily rolling up the lengths of parchment left on the table.
"Journey all right, Harry?"
Bill called, trying to gather up 12 scrolls at once.
"Mad-Eye didn't make you come via Greenland, then?"
"He tried,"
said Tonks, striding over to help Bill and immediately sending a candle toppling onto the last piece of parchment.
"Oh, no, sorry."
"Here, dear," said Mrs. Weasley, sounding exasperated, and she repaired the parchment with a wave of her wand. In the flash of light caused by Mrs. Weasley's charm, Harry caught a glimpse of what looked like the plan of a building. Mrs. Weasley had seen him looking, She snatched the plan off the table and stuffed it into Bill's heavily laden arms. "This sort of thing ought to be cleared away promptly at the end of the meetings," she snapped, before sweeping off towards an ancient dresser from which she started unloading dinner plates. Bill took out his wand, muttered, "Evanesco," and the scrolls vanished.
"Sit down, Harry," said Sirius. "You've met Mung Dungus, haven't you?"
The thing Harry had taken to be a pile of rags gave a prolonged grunting snore and then jerked awake.
"Someone say me name," Mung Dungus mumbled sleepily. "I agree with Sirius."
He raised a very grubby hand in the air as though voting, his droopy bloodshot eyes unfocused. Ginny giggled.
"The meeting's over, Dung,"
said Sirius, as they all sat down around him at the table.
"Harry's arrived."
"Eh?"
said Mung Dungus, peering balefully at Harry through his matted ginger hair.
"Blimey, so he has, yeah. You all right, Harry?"
"Yeah," said Harry. Mung Dungus fumbled nervously in his pockets, still staring at Harry, and pulled out a grimy black pipe. He stuck it in his mouth, ignited the end of it with his wand, and took a deep pull on it. Great billowing clouds of greenish smoke obscured him in seconds.
"Oh, you apology,"
grunted a voice from the middle of the smelly cloud.
"For the last time, Mung Dungus," called Mrs. Weasley, "will you please not smoke that thing in the kitchen, especially not when we're about to eat?"
Said
Mung Dungus.
"Right, sorry, Molly."
The cloud of smoke vanished as Mung Dungus stowed his pipe back in his pocket, but an acrid smell of burning socks lingered.
"And if you want dinner before midnight, I'll need a hand," Mrs. Weasley said to the room at large. "No, you can stay where you are, Harry, dear. You've had a long journey." "What can I do, Molly?"
said Tonks enthusiastically, bounding forward. Mrs. Weasley hesitated, looking apprehensive.
No, it's all right, Tonks. You have a rest, too. You've done enough today." No, I want to help,"
said Tonks brightly, knocking over a chair as she hurried toward the dresser from which Ginny was collecting cutlery. Soon a series of heavy knives were chopping meat and vegetables of their own accord, supervised by Mr. Weasley, while Mrs. Weasley stirred a cauldron dangling over the fire, and the others took out plates, more goblets, and food from the pantry. Harry was left at the table with Sirius and Mung Dungus, who was still blinking mournfully at him.
"Seen old Figgy since?"
he asked. "No," said Harry. "I haven't seen anyone."
"See, I wouldn't have left,"
said Mung Dungus, leaning forward, a pleading note in his voice.
"But I had a business opportunity."
Harry felt something brush against his knees and started, but it was only Crookshanks, Hermione's bandy-legged ginger cat, who wound himself once around Harry's legs, purring, then jumped onto Sirius's lap and curled up. Sirius scratched him absent-mindedly behind the ears as he turned, still grim-faced, to Harry.
"Had a good summer so far?"
"No, it's been lousy," said Harry. For the first time, something like a grin flitted across Sirius's face.
"Don't know what you're complaining about myself."
"What?" said Harry incredulously.
"Personally, I'd have welcomed a Dementor attack. A deadly struggle for my soul would have broken the monotony nicely. You think you've had it bad, at least you've been able to get out and about, stretch your legs, get into a few fights. I've been stuck inside for a month."
"How come?" asked Harry, frowning.
"Because the Ministry of Magic's still after me, and Voldemort will know all about me being an Animagus by now. Wormtail will have told him, so my big disguise is useless. There's not much I can do for the Order of the Phoenix, or so Dumbledore feels."
There was something about the slightly flattened tone of voice in which Sirius uttered Dumbledore's name that told Harry that Sirius was not very happy with the headmaster either. Harry felt a sudden upsurge of affection for his godfather.
"At least you've known what's been going on," he said bracingly.
"Oh, yeah,"
said Sirius sarcastically.
"Listening to Snape's reports, having to take all his snide hints that he's out there risking his life, while I'm sat on my backside here having a nice comfortable time. Asking me how the cleaning's going."
"What cleaning?" asked Harry.
"Trying to make this place fit for human habitation," said Sirius,
waving a hand around the dismal kitchen.
"No one's lived here for 10 years, not since my dear mother died, unless you count her old house elf, and he's gone round the twist, hasn't cleaned anything in ages."
"Sirius,"
said Mundungus, who did not appear to have paid any attention to this conversation, but had been closely examining an empty goblet.
"This solid silver, mate?"
"Yes," said Sirius, surveying it with distaste. "Finest 15th-century goblin-wrought silver, embossed with a black family crest."
"That had come off, though,"
muttered Mundungus, polishing it with his cuff.
"Fred! George! No! Just carry them!"
Mrs. Weasley shrieked. Harry, Sirius, and Mundungus looked around, and, a split second later, dived away from the table. Fred and George had bewitched a large cauldron of stew, an iron flagon of butterbeer, and a heavy wooden breadboard, complete with knife, to hurtle through the air toward them. The stew skidded the length of the table and came to a halt just before the end, leaving a long black burn on the wooden surface. The flagon of butterbeer fell with a crash, spilling its contents everywhere, and the bread knife slipped off the board and landed point down and quivering ominously, exactly where Sirius's right hand had been seconds before.
"For heaven's sake!" screamed Mrs. Weasley. "There was no need. I've had enough of this. Just because you're allowed to use magic now, you don't have to whip your wands out for every tiny little thing." "We were just trying to save a bit of time," said Fred, hurrying forward and wrenching the bread knife out of the table. "Sorry, Sirius, mate. Didn't mean to."
Harry and Sirius were both laughing. Mundungus, who had toppled backward off his chair, was swearing as he got to his feet. Crookshanks had given an angry hiss and shot off under the dresser, from whence his large yellow eyes glowed in the darkness.
"Boys," Mr. Weasley said, lifting the stew back into the middle of the table, "your mother's right. You're supposed to show a sense of responsibility now you've come of age. None of your brothers caused this sort of trouble?"
Mrs. Weasley raged at the twins, slamming a fresh flagon of butterbeer onto the table and spilling almost as much again.
"Bill didn't feel the need to apparate every few feet. Charlie didn't charm everything he met. Percy..."
She stopped dead, catching her breath with a frightened look at her husband, whose expression was suddenly wooden.
"Let's eat," said Bill quickly.
"It looks wonderful, Molly," said Lupin, ladling stew onto a plate for her and handing it across the table. For a few minutes there was silence but for the chink of plates and cutlery and the scraping of chairs as everyone settled down to their food. Then Mrs. Weasley turned to Sirius and said,
"I've been meaning to tell you, there's something trapped in that writing desk in the drawing room. It keeps rattling and shaking. Of course it could just be a boggart, but I thought we ought to ask Alistair to have a look at it before we let it out."
"Whatever you like," said Sirius indifferently.
"The curtains in there are full of doxies, too," Mrs. Weasley went on. "I thought we might try to tackle them tomorrow."
"I look forward to it," said Sirius.
Harry heard the sarcasm in his voice, but he was not sure that anyone else did. Opposite Harry, Tonks was entertaining Hermione and Ginny by transforming her nose between mouthfuls, screwing up her eyes each time with the same pained expression she had worn back in Harry's bedroom. Her nose swelled to a beak-like protuberance like Snape's, shrank to something resembling a button mushroom, and then sprouted a great deal of hair from each nostril. Apparently this was a regular mealtime entertainment, because after a while Hermione and Ginny started requesting their favourite noses.
"Do that one like a pig snout, Tonks."
Tonks obliged, and Harry, looking up, had the fleeting impression that a female Dudley was grinning at him from across the table. Mr. Weasley, Bill, and Lupin were having an intense discussion about goblins.
"They're not giving anything away yet," said Bill. "I still can't work out whether they believe he's back or not. Of course, they might prefer not to take sides at all. Keep out of it."
"I'm sure they'd never go over to you-know-who," said Mr. Weasley, shaking his head. "They've suffered losses, too. Remember that goblin family he murdered last time, somewhere near Nottingham?"
"I think it depends what they're offered," said Lupin.
"And I'm not talking about gold. If they're offered freedoms we've been denying them for centuries, they're going to be tempted. Have you still not had any luck with Ragnarok, Bill?"
"He's feeling pretty anti-wizard at the moment," said Bill. "He hasn't stopped raging about the Bagman business. He reckons the Ministry did a cover-up. Those goblins never got their gold from him, you know."
A gale of laughter from the middle of the table drowned the rest of Bill's words. Fred, George, Ron and Mundungus were rolling around in their seats.
"And then," choked Mundungus, tears running down his face, "and then, if you'll believe it, he says to me, he says, 'Here, Dung, where did you get all them toads from?
"'cause some son of a bludger's gone and nicked all mine. "'And I says, "'Nicked all your toes? "'Well, what next? "'So you'll be wanting some more, then?' "'And if you'll believe me, lads, "'the gormless gargoyle buys all his own toads "'back off me for twice what he paid in the first place.'
"'I don't think we need to hear any more of your business dealings. "'Thank you very much, Mundungus,' said Mrs. Weasley sharply, "'as Ron slumped forward onto the table, howling with laughter.
"'Beg pardon, Molly,' said Mundungus at once, "'wiping his eyes and winking at Harry. "'But, you know, Will nicked some off Watchy Harris in the first place, "'so I wasn't really doing nothing wrong.'
"'I don't know where you learned about right and wrong, Mundungus, "'but you seem to have missed a few crucial lessons.' "'said Mrs. Weasley coldly.
"'Fred and George buried their faces in their goblets of butterbeer. "'George was hiccuping. "'For some reason, Mrs. Weasley threw a very nasty look at Sirius "'before getting to her feet and going to fetch a large rhubarb crumble for pudding. "'Harry looked round at his godfather.
"'Molly doesn't approve of Mundungus,' said Sirius in an undertone.
"'How come he's in the order?' Harry said very quietly.
"'He's useful,' Sirius muttered. "'Knows all the crooks. Well, he would, seeing as he's one himself. "'But he's also very loyal to Dumbledore, who helped him out of a tight spot once. "'He pays to have someone like Dung around. He hears things we don't. "'But Molly thinks inviting him to stay for dinner is going too far. "'She hasn't forgiven him for slipping off duty when he was supposed to be tailing you.'
Three helpings of rhubarb crumble and custard later, and the waistband on Harry's jeans was feeling uncomfortably tight, which was saying something as the jeans had once been Dudley's. He laid down his spoon in a lull in the general conversation. Mr. Weasley was leaning back in his chair, looking replete and relaxed. Tonks was yawning widely, her nose now back to normal, and Ginny, who had lured Crookshanks out from under the dresser, was sitting cross-legged on the floor, rolling butterbeer corks for him to chase.
"'Nearly time for bed, I think,' said Mrs. Weasley on a yawn.
"'Not just yet, Molly,'
said Sirius, pushing away his empty plate and turning to look at Harry.
"'You know, I'm surprised at you. "'I thought the first thing you'd do when you got here "'would be to start asking questions about Voldemort.'
"'The atmosphere in the room changed "'with the rapidity Harry associated with the arrival of Dementors. "'Where seconds before it had been sleepily relaxed, "'it was now alert, even tense.' A frisson had gone around the table at the mention of Voldemort's name. Lupin, who had been about to take a sip of wine, lowered his goblet slowly, looking wary.
"'I did,' said Harry indignantly. "'I asked Ron and Hermione, but they said we're not allowed in the order, so—' "'And they're quite right,' said Mrs. Weasley. "'You're too young.'
She was sitting bolt upright in her chair, her fist clenched upon its arms, every trace of drowsiness gone.
"'Since when did someone have to be in the Order of the Phoenix to ask questions?' asked Sirius. "'Harry's been trapped in that muggle house for a month. "'He's got the right to know what's been happened.'
"'Hang on,' interrupted George loudly. "'How come Harry gets his questions answered?' said Fred angrily. "'We've been trying to get stuff out of you for a month, "'and you haven't told us a single stinking thing,' said George.
"'You're too young. You're not in the order,'
said Fred in a high-pitched voice that sounded uncannily like his mother's.
"'Harry's not even of age.'
"'It's not my fault you haven't been told what the order's doing,' said Sirius calmly. "'That's your parents' decision. Harry, on the other hand—'
"'It's not down to you to decide what's good for Harry,' said Mrs. Weasley sharply. Her normally kindly face looked dangerous. "'You haven't forgotten what Dumbledore said, I suppose.'
"'Which bit?'
Sirius asked politely, but with an air as though readying himself for a fight.
"'The bit about not telling Harry more than he needs to know,' said Mrs. Weasley, placing a heavy emphasis on the last three words.
Ron, Hermione, Fred and George's heads turned from Sirius to Mrs. Weasley as though following a tennis rally. Ginny was kneeling amid a pile of abandoned butterbeer corks, watching the conversation with her mouth slightly open. Lupin's eyes were fixed on Sirius.
"'I don't intend to tell him more than he needs to know, Molly,' said Sirius. "'But as he was the one who saw Voldemort come back—'
Again there was a collective shudder around the table at the name.
"'He has more right than most to—'
"'He's not a member of the Order of the Phoenix,' said Mrs. Weasley. "'He's only 15, and—'
"'And he's dealt with as much as most in the Order,' said Sirius. "'And more than some.'
"'No one's denying what he's done,' said Mrs. Weasley, her voice rising, her fist trembling on the arms of her chair. "'But he's still—'
"'He's not a child,' said Sirius impatiently.
"'He's not an adult, either,' said Mrs. Weasley, the colour rising in her cheeks. "'He's not James, Sirius.'
"'I'm perfectly clear who he is, thanks, Molly,' said Sirius coldly.
"'I'm not sure you are,' said Mrs. Weasley. "'Sometimes the way you talk about him is as though you think you've got your best friend back.'
"'What's wrong with that?' said Harry.
"'What's wrong, Harry, is that you are not your father, however much you might look like him,' said Mrs. Weasley, her eyes still boring into Sirius. "'You are still at school, and adults responsible for you should not forget it.'
"'Meaning I'm an irresponsible godfather?'
demanded Sirius, his voice rising.
"'Meaning you've been known to act rashly, Sirius, which is why Dumbledore keeps reminding you to stay at home and—'
"'We'll leave my instructions from Dumbledore out of this, if you please,' said Sirius loudly.
"'Arthur,' said Mrs. Weasley, rounding on her husband. "'Arthur, back me up!'
Mr. Weasley did not speak at once. He took off his glasses and cleaned them slowly on his robes, not looking at his wife. Only when he had replaced them carefully on his nose did he say,
"'Dumbledore knows the position has changed, Molly. He accepts that Harry will have to be filled in to a certain extent now that he is staying at headquarters.
Yes, but there's a difference between that and inviting him to ask whatever he likes.
Personally,
said Lupin quietly, looking away from Sirius at last, as Mrs. Weasley turned quickly to him, hopeful that finally she was about to get an ally.
I think it better that Harry gets the facts. Not all the facts, Molly, but the general picture from us, rather than a garbled version from others.
His expression was mild, but Harry felt sure that Lupin at least knew that some extendable ears had survived Mrs. Weasley's purge.
Well, said Mrs. Weasley, breathing deeply and looking around the table for support that did not come. Well, I can see I'm going to be overruled. I'll just say this. Dumbledore must have had his reasons for not wanting Harry to know too much, and speaking as someone who has got Harry's best interests at heart.
He's not your son, said Sirius quietly.
He's as good as, said Mrs. Weasley fiercely. Who else has he got?
He's got me.
Yes, said Mrs. Weasley, her lip curling. The thing is, it's been rather difficult for you to look after him while you've been locked up in Azkaban, hasn't it?
Sirius started to rise from his chair.
Molly, you're not the only person at this table who cares about Harry, said Lupin sharply. Sirius, sit down.
Mrs. Weasley's lower lip was trembling. Sirius sank slowly back into his chair, his face white.
"'I think Harry ought to be allowed a say in this,' Lupin continued. "'He's old enough to decide for himself.' "'I want to know what's been going on,' Harry said at once.
He did not look at Mrs. Weasley. He had been touched by what she had said about his being as good as a son. But he was also impatient at her mollycoddling. Sirius was right. He was not a child.
"'Very well,' said Mrs. Weasley, her voice cracking. "'Ginny, Ron, Hermione, Fred, George, I want you out of this kitchen, now.'
There was instant uproar.
"'We're of age!'
Fred and George bellowed together.
"'If Harry's allowed, why can't I?' shouted Ron. "'Mom, I want to,' wailed Ginny. "'No!' shouted Mrs. Weasley, standing up, her eyes overbright. "'I absolutely forbid!'
"'Molly, you can't stop Fred and George,' said Mr. Weasley wearily. "'They are of age.
They're still at school.
But they're legally adults now,' said Mr. Weasley in the same tired voice.
Mrs. Weasley was now scarlet in the face.
Right, Fred and George can stay, but Ron,
Harry'll tell me and Hermione everything you say anyway,' said Ron hotly.
Won't you?
He added uncertainly, meeting Harry's eyes. For a split second, Harry considered telling Ron that he wouldn't tell him a single word, that he could try a taste of being kept in the dark and see how he liked it. But the nasty impulse vanished as they looked at each other.
"'Of course I will,' Harry said.
Ron and Hermione beamed.
"'Fine!' shouted Mrs. Weasley. "'Fine! Ginny! Bed!'
Ginny did not go quietly.
They could hear her raging and storming at her mother all the way up the stairs, and when she reached the hall, Mrs. Black's ear-splitting shrieks were added to the din. Lupin hurried off to the portrait to restore calm. It was only after he had returned, closing the kitchen door behind him and taking his seat at the table again, that Sirius spoke.
"Okay, Harry. What do you want to know?"
Harry took a deep breath and asked the question that had been obsessing him for a month. "Where's Voldemort? What's he doing? I've been trying to watch the Muggle news," he said, ignoring the renewed shudders and winces at the name. "And there hasn't been anything that looks like him yet. No funny deaths or anything."
"That's because there haven't been any suspicious deaths yet,"
said Sirius.
"Not as far as we know, anyway. And we know quite a lot."
"More than he thinks we do, anyway," said Lupin. "How come he's stopped killing people?" Harry asked. He knew that Voldemort had murdered more than once in the last year alone.
"Because he doesn't want to draw attention to himself at the moment," said Sirius. "It would be dangerous for him. His comeback didn't come off quite the way he wanted it to, you see. He messed it up. Or rather, you messed it up for him," said Lupin, with a satisfied smile.
"How?" Harry asked perplexedly.
"You weren't supposed to survive," said Sirius.
"Nobody apart from his Death Eaters was supposed to know he'd come back. But you survived to bear witness.
And the very last person he wanted alerted to his return the moment he got back was Dumbledore," said Lupin. "And you made sure Dumbledore knew at once."
"How has that helped?" Harry asked.
"Are you kidding?" said Bill incredulously. "Dumbledore was the only one you-know-who was ever scared of." "Thanks to you, Dumbledore was able to recall the Order of the Phoenix about an hour after Voldemort returned," said Sirius.
"So what's the Order been doing?" said Harry, looking around at them all.
"Working as hard as we can to make sure Voldemort can't carry out his plans," said Sirius.
"How do you know what his plans are?" Harry asked quickly.
"Dumbledore's got a shrewd idea," said Lupin, "and Dumbledore's shrewd ideas normally turn out to be accurate."
"So what does Dumbledore reckon he's planning?"
"Well, firstly, he wants to build up his army again," said Sirius. "In the old days, he had huge numbers at his command. Witches and wizards he'd bullied or bewitched into following him. His faithful Death Eaters, a great variety of dark creatures. You heard him planning to recruit the giants? Well, there'll just be one group he's after. He's certainly not going to try and take on the Ministry of Magic with only a dozen Death Eaters."
"So you're trying to stop him getting more followers?"
"We're doing our best," said Lupin.
"How?"
"Well, the main thing is to try and convince as many people as possible that you-know-who really has returned, to put them on their guard," said Bill. "It's proving tricky, though."
"Why?"
"Because of the Ministry's attitude," said Tonks. "You saw Cornelius Fudge after you-know-who came back, Harry. Well, he hasn't shifted his position at all. He's absolutely refusing to believe it's happened."
"But why?" said Harry desperately. "Why is he being so stupid? If Dumbledore..."
"Ah, well, you've put your finger on the problem," said Mr. Weasley with a wry smile. "Dumbledore."
"Fudge is frightened of him, you see," said Tonks sadly.
"Frightened of Dumbledore?" said Harry incredulously. "Frightened of what he's up to," said Mr. Weasley. "You see, Fudge thinks Dumbledore's plotting to overthrow him. He thinks Dumbledore wants to be Minister of Magic."
"But Dumbledore doesn't want..."
"Of course he doesn't," said Mr. Weasley. "He's never wanted the minister's job, even though a lot of people wanted him to take it when Millicent Bagnold retired. Fudge came to power instead, but he's never quite forgotten how much popular support Dumbledore had, even though Dumbledore never applied for the job. Deep down, Fudge knows Dumbledore's much cleverer than he is, a much more powerful wizard, and in the early days of his ministry he was forever asking Dumbledore for help and advice," said Lupin. "But it seems that he's become fond of power now and much more confident. He loves being Minister of Magic, and he's managed to convince himself that he's the clever one, and Dumbledore's simply stirring up trouble for the sake of it."
"How can he think that?" said Harry angrily. "How can he think Dumbledore would just make it all up? That I'd make it all up?
Because accepting that Voldemort's back would mean trouble like the Ministry hasn't had to cope with for nearly 14 years, said Sirius bitterly. Fudge just can't bring himself to face it. It's so much more comfortable to convince himself Dumbledore's lying to destabilize him.
You see the problem, said Lupin. While the Ministry insists there is nothing to fear from Voldemort, it's hard to convince people he's back, especially as they really don't want to believe it in the first place. What's more, the Ministry is leaning heavily on the Daily Prophet not to report any of what they're calling Dumbledore's rumour-mongering. So most of the wizarding community are completely unaware anything's happened, and that makes them easy targets for the Death Eaters if they're using the Imperius Curse.
But you're telling people, aren't you? Said Harry, looking around at Mr. Weasley, Sirius, Bill, Mundungus, Lupin and Tonks. You're letting people know he's back.
They all smiled humorlessly.
Well, as everyone thinks I'm a mad mass murderer, and the Ministry's put a 10,000 galleon price on my head, I can hardly stroll up the street and start handing out leaflets, can I? Said Sirius restlessly.
And I'm not a very popular dinner guest with most of the community, said Lupin. It's an occupational hazard of being a werewolf.
Tonks and Arthur would lose their jobs at the Ministry if they started shooting their mouths off, said Sirius. And it's very important for us to have spies inside the Ministry, because you can bet Voldemort will have them.
We've managed to convince a couple of people, though, said Mr. Weasley. Tonks here for one. She's too young to have been in the Order of the Phoenix last time, and having Aurors on our side is a huge advantage. Kingsley Shacklebolt's been a real asset, too. He's in charge of the hunt for Sirius, so he's been feeding the Ministry information that Sirius is in Tibet.
But if none of you's putting the news out that Voldemort's back, Harry began.
Who said none of us was putting the news out? Said Sirius. Why do you think Dumbledore's in such trouble?
What do you mean? Harry asked.
They're trying to discredit him, said Lupin. Didn't you see the Daily Prophet last week? They reported that he'd been voted out of the chairmanship of the International Confederation of Wizards because he's getting old and losing his grip. But it's not true. He was voted out by Ministry Wizards after he made a speech announcing Voldemort's return. They've demoted him from Chief Warlock on the Wizengamot. That's the Wizard High Court, and they're talking about taking away his Order of Merlin First Class, too.
But Dumbledore says he doesn't care what they do as long as they don't take him off the chocolate frog cards, said Bill, grinning.
It's no laughing matter, said Mr. Weasley shortly. If he carries on defying the Ministry like this, he could end up in Azkaban, and the last thing we want is Dumbledore locked up. While you-know-who knows Dumbledore's out there and wise to what he's up to, he's going to go cautiously for a while. If Dumbledore's out of the way, well, you-know-who will have a clear field.
But if Voldemort's trying to recruit more Death Eaters, it's bound to get out that he's come back, isn't it? Asked Harry desperately.
Voldemort doesn't march up to people's houses and bang on their front doors, Harry, said Sirius. He tricks, jinxes, and blackmails them. He's well practiced at operating in secrecy. In any case, gathering followers is only one thing he's interested in. He's got other plans, too. Plans he can put into operation very quietly indeed, and he's concentrating on them at the moment.
What's he after apart from followers? Harry asked swiftly. He thought he saw Sirius and Lupin exchange the most fleeting of looks before Sirius said,
"Stuff he can only get by stealth."
When Harry continued to look puzzled, Sirius said,
"Like a weapon, something he didn't have last time."
"When he was powerful before?"
"Yes."
"Like what kind of weapon?" said Harry.
"Something worse than the Avada Kedavra."
"That's enough." Mrs. Weasley spoke from the shadows beside the door. Harry had not noticed her return from taking Ginny upstairs. Her arms were crossed, and she looked furious.
"I want you in bed now, all of you," she added, looking around at Fred, George, Ron, and Hermione.
"You can't boss us," Fred began.
"Watch me!"
snarled Mrs. Weasley. She was trembling slightly as she looked at Sirius.
"You've given Harry plenty of information. Any more, and you might just as well induct him into the Order straight away."
"Why not?" said Harry quickly. "I'll join. I want to join. I want to fight."
"No!"
It was not Mrs. Weasley who spoke this time, but Lupin.
The Order is comprised only of over-age wizards, he said. Wizards who have left school, he added, as Fred and George opened their mouths. There are dangers involved of which you can have no idea, any of you. I think Molly's right, Sirius. We've said enough. Sirius half shrugged, but did not argue. Mrs. Weasley beckoned imperiously to her sons and Hermione. One by one they stood up, and Harry, recognizing defeat, followed suit. Chapter 6. The Noble and Most Ancient House of Black. Mrs. Weasley followed them upstairs, looking grim.
I want you all to go straight to bed, no talking, she said as they reached the first landing. We've got a busy day tomorrow. I expect Ginny's asleep, she added to Hermione, so try not to wake her up.
Asleep, yeah, right,
said Fred in an undertone after Hermione bade them good night and they were climbing to the next floor. If Ginny's not lying awake waiting for Hermione to tell her everything they said downstairs, then I'm a flubberworm.
All right, Ron, Harry, said Mrs. Weasley on the second landing, pointing them into their bedroom. Off to bed with you.
Night, Harry and Ron said to the twins.
Sleep tight,
said Fred, winking. Mrs. Weasley closed the door behind Harry with a sharp snap. The bedroom looked, if anything, even danker and gloomier than it had on first sight. The blank picture on the wall was now breathing very slowly and deeply, as though its invisible occupant was asleep. Harry put on his pajamas, took off his glasses, and climbed into his chilly bed, while Ron threw owl treats up on top of the wardrobe to pacify Hedwig and Pigwidgeon, who were clattering around and rustling their wings restlessly.
We can't let them out to hunt every night, Ron explained as he pulled on his maroon pajamas. Dumbledore doesn't want too many owls swooping around the square. Thinks it'll look suspicious. Oh, yeah, I forgot.
He crossed to the door and bolted it. What are you doing that for?
Creature, said Ron as he turned off the light. First night I was here, he came wandering in at 3 in the morning. Trust me, you don't want to wake up and find him prowling around your room. Anyway,
he got into his bed, settled down under the covers, then turned to look at Harry in the darkness. Harry could see his outline by the moonlight filtering in through the grimy window.
What do you reckon?
Harry didn't need to ask what Ron meant.
Well, they didn't tell us much we couldn't have guessed, did they?
He said, thinking of all that had been said downstairs.
I mean, all they've really said is that the Order's trying to stop people joining Vault.
There was a sharp intake of breath from Ron.
Demort, said Harry firmly. When are you going to start using his name, Sirius and Lupin do?
Ron ignored this last comment.
Yeah, you're right, he said. We already knew nearly everything they told us from using the extendable ears. The only new bit was... Crack! Ouch!
Keep your voice down, Ron, or Mum will be back up here.
You two just apparated on my knees.
Yeah, well, it's harder in the dark.
Harry saw the blurred outlines of Fred and George leaping down from Ron's bed. There was a groan of bedsprings, and Harry's mattress descended a few inches as George sat down near his feet.
So, got there yet?
Said George eagerly. The weapon Sirius mentioned? Said Harry.
Let's slip more like, said Fred with relish,
now sitting next to Ron.
We didn't hear about that on the old extendables, did we?
What do you reckon it is?
Said Harry.
Could be anything, said Fred.
But there can't be anything worse than the Avada Kedavra curse, can there? Said Ron.
What's worse than death?
Maybe it's something that can kill loads of people at once, suggested George.
Maybe it's some particularly painful way of killing people, said Ron fearfully.
He's got the Cruciatus curse for causing pain, said Harry. He doesn't need anything more efficient than that.
There was a pause, and Harry knew that the others, like him, were wondering what horrors this weapon could perpetrate.
So, who do you think's got it now?
Asked George.
I hope it's our side, said Ron, sounding slightly nervous.
If it is, Dumbledore's probably keeping it, said Fred. Where, said Ron, quickly. Hogwarts?
Bet it is, said George. That's where he hid the Sorcerer's Stone.
A weapon's going to be a lot bigger than the stone, though, said Ron.
Not necessarily, said Fred.
Yeah, size is no guarantee of power, said George. Look at Ginny.
What do you mean? Said Harry.
You've never been on the receiving end of one of her bat-bogey hexes, have you?
Shh, said Fred, half rising from the bed. Listen.
They fell silent.
Footsteps were coming up the stairs again. "Mum!" said George, and without further ado there was a loud crack, and Harry felt the weight vanish from the end of his bed. A few seconds later, and they heard the floorboard creak outside their door. Mrs. Weasley was plainly listening to see whether they were talking or not. Hedwig and Pigwidgeon hooted dolefully. The floorboard creaked again, and they heard her heading upstairs to check on Fred and George.
"She doesn't trust us at all, you know," said Ron regretfully.
Harry was sure he would not be able to fall asleep. The evening had been so packed with things to think about,